Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with the home remodeler, T. Frank Carr. New profession, T. Frank?
Well, I cut the end of one of my fingers off on the last floor I put in, so I don't know if that makes me more or less professional, but yeah, we put a new, the studio has a new floor, so I'm very excited to be in here for the first time since we moved into the house. Like, I moved into this room a week before the first football game in 2022, and we have not touched it, other than like what you see behind me on the wall. Like, it is all the same as when I moved in, so we finally got something done with this room. I'm very happy about that. And it's the last floor we have to put in the house. We have replaced all of the carpet. We are professional floor installers, and my knees are so thankful that it's over.
So there's a couple rooms I have in my house, T. Frank, that I wouldn't mind tearing out the carpeting, putting a little hardwood. Now that you're done with your home, perhaps you're available, outsource?
Sure. You want to pay me, then we got a deal.
All right. We'll negotiate. We'll negotiate, T. Frank. All right. Let's move forward. Let's get to some Penn State topic. And here's what I thought we'd do for today, T. Frank. Nothing really struck my fancy in the past week that newsworthy that we needed to deal with. So I thought we'd get to this. We're actually getting closer to the season. We are now a late July. Camp's going to start in a couple weeks. I thought, let's look forward. Let's look forward to the 24 season. And I've got an opportunity that most people would kill for, Penn State fans. I've got an hour of T. Frank that I can pepper them with any of my questions that I want. That's what I'm going to do, T. Frank. So you ready for that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Let's start with this, T. Frank. This season, we're going to have with Penn State something new. The lion position is going to come into being. Who are the players that are best positioned to play the line position for Penn State?
So I'm going to start with, everyone knows Jalen Reed is the lion as the starter for that position. And that is, that's been pretty clear since the very beginning. I think that he's going to be an integral part of this defense from a number of different perspectives. But then the question becomes, is there another safety that we have to take seriously in the conversation for the line position? Because at Indiana, it was pretty much one defensive back and then a bunch of slot corners that played the line position. So it sort of vacillates between a safety and then just being a pure nickel position in a 4-2 defense with five defensive backs, and it's just pure coverage at that point. But I've been wondering since the blue-white game how seriously we have to take Colin Dinkins, because his performance reminded me of Dom DeLuca, where it's not just that he was getting turnovers, right? So it wasn't just that he was making plays. It was also that he was making plays on good football players in real situations where he had to react as a football player. Like, it was a hard play he made, and then he got an interception for a touchdown. The other interesting thing that's happened since then is he's moved positions to safety. So he was a big corner for the Nittany Lions before, and I'm trying to find him here to see exactly how much he weighs. I think it's 205. That's a signal to me that we have to take him seriously as one of the Colin Dinkins, 6'2", 203. So he's got the size to play the position. He's somebody I think we have to consider during training camp, as he might be the third player rotating at that position, but he could be a guy who plays. So you'd have your starting nickel corner, who still, that battle still has to play itself out. You have Jalen Reed, and then there's an opportunity for a role player there at the line position as that hybrid player, and Colin Dinkins feels like a guy who is in position for that. And this is typically when that happens for a guy that is a run-on player. When you change defensive scheme or you change something where you're looking for a different type of skill, like when you went to Manny Diaz's 4-3 defense that featured, you know, the, oh my gosh, I purge information so quickly. What was it called at that point? what was that position called? The prowler is what I thought it was. Yeah. So like in the prowler defense, that free player. So whenever you change a system, then you have to find guys that fit that new positional description. And Dinkins has an opportunity here, I think.
How impressive, or impressive is the wrong word, but how nice is it to be able to find a walk-on or run-on who becomes a factor on the team, T. Frank?
So I think I don't want to downplay it because it's awesome. I mean, you and I were talking about earlier, everyone loves a great deal when you feel like you get a bargain on something. And that's the football equivalent of you find a secret superstar. And, you know, I'm not saying Dinkins is going to be a superstar, but, you know, everyone loves the undrafted player that goes on to be a star in the NFL because for some reason we all feel connected to the underdog. We all have a narrative in our own life where we're an underdog. And so it feels great, but I don't think functionally it changes all that much because you have the depth of that position specifically this year that I think they'd be fine either way. But this is just, it's found money where you have a guy that you liked in the program. Maybe you didn't know exactly where he fits. And now, boom, you found a role for this player. There will be other players on scholarship that eventually take over in a position like this, but I think this is a great opportunity for a guy like Dinkins to come in and be part of that conversation for the next couple of years.
I love that analogy. I told you earlier when we were having our off-the-air conversation, I love a bargain. I love a deal. That's a great analogy. Getting a walk-on who's going to be a factor. That's the analogy, T. Frank. Well done. Speaking of walk-ons, how about Dom DeLuca? I know he's now a scholarship player, but what's his role going to be this year?
So that's a great question and one that we're going to find out here in a little bit because camp starts on the 31st, and I don't know, based on the blue-white game, what I can take away from the plan for Dom DeLuca. He played Will linebacker. So I think right now my assumption is he is going to be a co-starter backup. So he's going to play reps. He's going to be on the team and be a part of the defense. But he's going to rotate in behind Tony Rojas. That's how I read the situation. And if they need to go to three linebacker sets, they can then just take him and Rojas, move them to Sam, and pluck Abdul Carter from defensive end and play him at that Will position. Or you can even just rotate within a play in a zone blitzing situation, and you've got the same, essentially the same result. So I think he's a box linebacker now because he got bigger this offseason, because we just finished talking about the Lion and they want that to be a core of their identity. So that's my assumption now, but we'll see what happens going forward, because you could absolutely have the same situation where if you wanted to play three linebackers, all you do is flip Tony Rojas over, or you flip Dom DeLuca over and you keep Tony Rojas at Will, and then you've got a complete linebacker core. They have a lot of different ways they can slice this cheese, and then it's just going to be about who's best and their preferences.
I mentioned this before. If they keep up with the tradition, and I have no reason to think they won't, of playing a lot of players on defense, I've often said that the last couple of years it felt like they had 20 starters on defense, the way they rotated players. So I think sometimes we as fans get caught up in who's the starter, who's playing this position, when the answer is, well, multiple guys are playing that position.
Yeah. It's almost like you need to know who's coming in the third quarter. Like, that's who the starter is. It's like, who are you relying on when you have to win? Like, you've got to make a difference in the game and not necessarily who's getting the very first snap. Because, I mean, I'm trying to talk down on Nick Tarburton. He was the starter in 2022. But Chop Robinson was the dude at that position. So, you know, the name starter can mean a couple of different things. And to me, it means who's playing more and who's in there for those really important downs, as opposed to who's getting the start that week.
Yes, exactly. All right, let's stay on the defense a little bit. I'm curious to get your take on this. How good are the transfer cornerbacks, T. Frank? Jalen Kimber, A.J. Harris, and I'm going to throw in Audavian Collins, too, who's a second year in, but there's been some pretty positive talk about him also.
They may have hit the jackpot on this, on Audavian Collins. Talking about found money, a guy who came in unheralded. I think he was a late pickup too, of a guy that they kind of got from Mississippi State after the main rush of the transfer portal. I don't necessarily remember if he was a spring transfer. I don't quote me on that. But then you've got AJ Harris and Jalen Kimber coming in this year. AJ Harris was a high four star, and the only reason he left Georgia was I believe there was some conversation of, is he a safety? Has he been passed over by somebody in the younger corner there? Did he fit what they wanted to do? But don't worry. they may have been very wrong about that, because he is not slow. He is 6'1", 190. He's physical. He fights with players, and he's also got the athleticism to stay with them in coverage. So, you know, he could be as good as the guys they just gave to the NFL. And there's a world in which, you know, Kalen King was a certain size, and he was a certain speed, and he was a certain toughness, and all of that worked out to be basically an All-American in 2022. AJ Harris has similar traits and is bigger. So that's, to me, whenever you have something like that, it's like, okay, so let's see where this ceiling is, because I don't necessarily know where it is right now. And then Kimber is a guy who's got a lot of athleticism and needs to be more consistent on the football field. Having a good pass rush, having the defensive structure around him, can unlock a guy who's a veteran, who's seen a lot of time. He's a redshirt senior. So they have ultra talent. Audavian Collins is really, really fast. They've got a lot of really good pieces in this cornerback room. I think, more excited now about the future of this room than I was, certainly a year ago. But whenever you see new potential and you got new players on the roster, you always get excited. So I don't want to shoot over the top of expectations, because having Joey Porter Jr. and Johnny Dixon and Kalen King was a great trio. But they have the potential to have three or four of four guys deep here in this cornerback room. So it should be a very good group that, if they put it all together this year, I think can match what they did last year.
Well, when you talked about Collins, I immediately thought of Johnny Dixon, because when Dixon came in, I remember thinking, that's kind of an odd pickup. Yeah, I'm not sure how he fits in. Where, boy, was I wrong. Okay. It may have taken an extra year, but obviously that was a great pickup. And I kind of get that same vibe from Collins now. He came in kind of under the radar. They didn't talk about him his first year. We didn't see much of him on the field. Now, I mean, we hear that name all the time. He's highly complimented. Looking forward to seeing him. All right, T. Frank, that's it for quarter number one. Stick around. Lots more to go. A lot more questions for T. Frank when we get back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is T. Frank Carr. I'm Jim Galante. And I get the chance to have my own personal Ask T. Frank show. I'm just asking them questions I got for the 2024 season. So far, quarter number one, fantastic, great information, T. Frank. We started on the defense. I'm going to stick there at least for one more question. I'm going to bounce around a bit, but I'm going to stay defense. Adisa Isaac and Chop Robinson versus Abdul Carter and Denai Dennis Sutton. Who you got?
This is a trick. This is the trick question.
T. Frank, just looking for your expertise and opinion.
Okay, so I'm gonna stick with Chop and Adisa, because I'm a coward and I've seen it. They've proven that they were one of the most dynamic combos under James Franklin at defensive end. So also, Adisa, I didn't give him enough credit because of what Chop was doing on the other side. But Adisa was a complete defensive end. He was a guy that played with physicality. He played with length. He set the edge well as a defender. He used his hands well. He just was not. It's funny because we looked at him originally when he was a freshman and a sophomore as a guy who was a speed only pass rusher, essentially. But he didn't have the same burst and freaky athleticism as a guy like Chop Robinson, who was virtually unblockable by college tackles, especially when they were in obvious passing situations. So that duo is hard to top when you got a first rounder and a third rounder and a guy who was really good at football. There is the same comparison for Denai Dennis Sutton and Abdul Carter, but my hesitation this whole offseason has been that Abdul has been getting a lot of rushes in the A-gap over running backs. Like, they schemed things up to get him not a free run, but they put their best player from a physicality and size and burst standpoint against these poor running backs who had to block him in space in the backfield with basically no margin for error. And they did Manny Diaz did a great job of getting him free in those situations. I just don't know what he's like coming off the edge. If he's going to replicate what Chop Robinson did, he's got the physical ability to do it, but I've seen guys with the physical ability to do it that haven't been able to do it the way Chop did. Chop was special in that sense. Abdul can be, but I want to see him play. Like, if we get to see him in camp or something like that, I want to see the first game, how he's adjusted from a technical standpoint to the defensive end room before I say this group, because they do have a higher ceiling. Again, a theoretical ceiling of Denai Dennis Sutton. If he is Adisa Isaac in the situation, he's a really good technical pass rusher and he's massive and he can play the run really well. So there are certain aspects of his game where he could be a dominant run defender and then be a plus pass rusher. And Abdul can be an elite speed rusher, and Abdul could be the whole thing, in my opinion. He could be the best of the best, but there's certain parts that are unproven from both of these guys that I need to see first. And not as much with Denai. It's more about what's Abdul going to be as that pure speed, the game wrecker threat. If he's that, then it's this group. But I can't give up on what I saw from Chop Robinson and Adisa Isaac so easily.
A couple quick things. Adisa Isaac, I'm with you. I think he was overlooked. And I think I always put Adisa Isaac and Curtis Jacobs together. I think they were both overlooked because of a star next to them. Yeah. Chop Robinson in the case of Adisa Isaac, Abdul Carter instead of Curtis Jacobs. Meanwhile, just under the radar, those two guys perform. You mentioned something, though, about Abdul Carter was used in such a way that he might go over the A-gap, end up having just a running back trying to block him, which just isn't going to work. Do you foresee us seeing similar kind of things? Even though he's officially now a defensive end, might they, on a third and long, big passing situation, them doing the same kind of thing with Abdul Carter?
Yeah, I actually brought this up on my Wednesday show last week when I was going through the five burning training camp questions I have, is what's the third down defense going to look like, and what is the nature of the defense in that particular situation, because it can change this year. Tom Allen really likes to play dime, which is another defensive back on the field. So you're already taking the lion position and using him as kind of a free player, a rover, as a pure third safety in these situations. Then you bring in a nickel corner, so you've got six defensive backs on the field. Then if you want to play four defensive ends or three defensive ends, who else is coming off the football field? Are you taking your will linebacker off the field? Are you taking both defensive tackles? So there's competition on third down every year. But when you've got a schematic change from a coach or from a philosophy standpoint, what does that result look like? And there is a very real situation where you've got guys coming off the edge in Amin Vanover and Jameel Lyons that have that athleticism to provide you those speed threats. I don't want to take away from Denai, but I could see them using Denai as a three technique, essentially bumping him inside. So then you have four pass rushers on the field and one guy that's kind of playing the run from that perspective. So I don't know, but yes, on third down, they could absolutely move him around the formation, blitz him in the A gap. They have too many threats on the defensive line to have all of them on the field at the same time. That's their only problem.
Well, it's a nice problem to have, T. Frank. And again, in the last year or two, as I said, they would sometimes, I called it 20 starters, and it was just finding the best way to use these guys. We always saw Manny Diaz as kind of that mad scientist kind of guy. He'd find a way to use these pieces. Is Tom Allen also that kind of defensive coordinator?
Yeah, and this is something that I asked my coworker, Nate Bauer, to ask the coaching staff. He did a series of summer interviews. And I asked him, like, how do you maintain the spirit of creativity without opening yourself to unnecessary risk, which you have to do when you're not at a place like Penn State that doesn't have a roster full of talent? Because there are certain things you have to do to generate pressure as a defense coordinator, where Tom Allen is willing to be a kamikaze defense coordinator and throw six guys and do some crazy rotations on the back end, maybe opening up for an explosive play for the offense, but also maybe an interception for his team. So what is the balance of that when you're at Penn State? And the answer was revealing from James Franklin, that he was saying you need to keep the spirit of that. You need to keep the spirit of that innovation on offense and defense and special teams, while also understanding maybe you don't have to do all of those things. So he is creative. He is, I think his coverages are some of the most complex and confounding if you're a young quarterback. But the question becomes, up front, it was very simple. They didn't do a whole lot because they didn't have guys that could, they didn't have a nose tackle that could go from the A gap to the B gap like a defensive end. Penn State has a roster full of those guys. So does it get more complicated up front is what I'm looking for this year. How does he adapt to maybe do more and still be less aggressive, if that makes sense?
It does, T. Frank, and it will be interesting to see. I've always felt that James Franklin, his selection of Tom Allen, part of what I liked about it is he had to play Tom Allen's defense for years now.
Yeah, a decade. So,
so he knows what it is that he was up against. He knew enough about him that it makes sense to bring him in because he was impressed by seeing him from the other side of the ball. Yeah. And I get the feeling James Franklin was asking that same question. Gee, yeah, that's what this guy could do with Indiana talent. What could he do with Penn State talent?
Yeah. And just quickly, a follow-up on that is, like, part of my job is learning, right? So not just learning about Penn State, but learning about football in general and, like, what's going on, what are the trends in football, what are some of the creative things you can do in a secondary, and also sometimes watching the puzzle pieces and trying to, like, deduce what they're doing is something that helps me learn football and understand the game better. And I learned a lot over the years watching Tom Allen's defense and how it operates. So I think just from that perspective of, like, I think that's valuable. And probably one of the reasons I'm high on Tom Allen is because I have an affinity for the years I've been watching his film and learning and getting better at my job, because that's what he forced me to do watching that film. So I think that there is a certain respect aspect to that, where you are doing all those things and you are putting people in positions where they have to work for it, as opposed to some schools when you're watching their film and be like, oh, look, I've seen this before 1,000 times. Tom Allen gave you something new to look at. And I always appreciate and respect that.
And like I said, I think that impressed James Franklin. And to me, the fact that he has faced him year after year gives me more confidence in the selection. All right, T. Frank, let's get to the offensive side of the ball. What's your confidence level in the wide receivers?
I'm going to go by a pollen count, and I'm going to say it is moderate. I have a moderate amount of confidence in the receivers today. It would be in the yellow. So it's not in the green. It's not in the red. I'd say it's firmly in the yellow. I'm probably higher on this group than a lot of people, but I also have major questions, and I also am terrified of the depth. So there are pieces here to be, I think, a really good offense under Andy Kotelnicki, but they've got to stay healthy, and a couple of them have to work out in terms of taking the next step and becoming what we expect them to be.
Well, who is that breakout candidate for you?
So I keep coming back to Caden Saunders as a guy who's going to be an improved role player. So that's, I always think, like, here's a guy who can give you more. Here's a guy who showed me on film he could get open. He could run the route correctly. He wasn't going to win in every situation. He's not your number one wide receiver, but he's also not the bum that people have made him out to be because he's not KJ Hamler. There's always this wild swing back and forth in the perception of reality. And Caden's a good football player. You know, maybe he doesn't run a 4-1 like everyone wants him to, but he's fast enough, and he's fast enough in every direction. He's a great lateral athlete, and you can't undercount that from a slot receiver. But the answer here is Trey Wallace. He has to be the lead receiver. He has to be a guy that gets a volume of catches and also creates big plays. Other guys can do one or the other. He's got to be able to do both. So that's the answer. But then when I look down the roster of, okay, let's say Trey Wallace does that and he's fine in that role, who's going to help balance the threats? And to me, it has to be Amari Evans as a deep threat. That has to come through. And then Caden Saunders has to be a guy that is a viable threat from the slot. They have to find some slot receiver to be a threat in this offense, because that's when it works best, is when they have that danger coming from the slot. Now, that can be a little bit of Tyler Warren, moving him out in the slot, moving him around the formation. It can be a little bit of Liam Clifford, but I would feel more comfortable personally about this projection if Caden Saunders is that guy who can threaten down the football field from the slot, have that intermediate and deep threat, not just be a chain mover underneath.
Very good, T. Frank. That's it for quarter number two. Quarter three, instead of my questions, we'll be taking your questions. It's Ask T. Frank when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter three. That means it's time for your questions and we ask T. Frank. And if you want to send in a question to T. Frank, just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button, and away you go, just like Sue from Howard did. Sue says, I often hear recruitment casters say that a certain school did a really good job of recruiting a certain player. What does that actually mean? What are the elements of a successful recruitment?
Interpersonal connection. Do you like the person you're talking to? Do you vibe with that guy, as the kids say? So it's about being able to relate to people and not being able to just relate to people who you see yourself in. Like, we all are good at relating to people who we feel like are like us, but can you relate to, can you find that commonality, somebody who maybe is different than you? And then it comes down to pushing the right button, saying the right thing, not lying, but like focusing on the right elements of your program of like, hey, this is a family environment. And maybe the guy's like, well, that's great. I want to go to the NFL. And then you go, look at all the players at your position that are in the NFL right now that have come from our school. And look at what here's the exact plan we have for you to get you there. And then follow this. Maybe it's nutrition. Maybe it's education. Whatever that person and their family are most interested in, then focus on that and make that the main part of your sales pitch. And the good thing is, if you believe in it, it's not sales. It's just you espousing the aspect of your program or your school that you think has merit. And so it's just understanding people. That's it. And then, of course, if it's NIL, just drop a bag of cash in front of them and then you're fine and it doesn't matter. And then you're a great recruiter.
You know, a couple of things. Yes, I'm glad that you mentioned NIL, because that has now become part of the picture. And, you know, and I always use the analogy, it's like doing a job interview, you know, who's offering you the most money. But you brought up, I've been in environments with salespeople, and it reminds me of one of the sayings, T. Frank, we always had was, sincerity is the key to sales. And as soon as you learn how to fake that, you got it made. But I think also something else you said that it, I believe that different schools have different cultures that will work with certain players. With Penn State, part of the sales pitch is this family atmosphere. Yeah. And you, that's the kind of player who that means something to them. You have other schools, and not that it's different, but if you're at Alabama, it's all business. You go to Alabama so that you could play on Sundays.
Yeah. Yeah. Ohio State is the same thing, you know, and that's why when you have those professional level recruits, you've got to find the ones. And I mean that as like players who have are in the recruiting system because we've already earmarked them from like sophomore year of their school, of their high school, to the NFL. We've already decided they have the obvious tools to be that. So then you need to find enough of the players that are talented in that way that also want the things you have. Because Penn State is a professional, like, this is the thing, is Penn State is trying to be both things. They're trying to be a team that gets you to the NFL. Because, again, we just talked about, I can't say that Denine Dennis Sutton and Abdul Carter, two NFL players, and probably guys that I would say in the first 50 picks are going off the board. I can't say those guys are the best duo because they already have two defensive ends that went to the NFL. One of them went in the first round. So Penn State has the proof, maybe not at every position, but they have the proof that they put guys in the NFL and they want to be this complete program as opposed to we're going to just like this is the national championship school. We lean into that. Penn State wants to be all of those things. But the way they are authentically going about this is the family atmosphere. And we're going to treat you like a human. And we're going to treat you like a person that we care about.
And there's example after example of that, not just with Penn State, but in the other schools also. And it doesn't make one better than the other. But, to answer, you know, Sue's question, I think. And there's also a level of even at Penn State, they're professing the family atmosphere, all that. And they do that, I think, for every recruit. But you know they're special recruits, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And there are other and there are guys that also you can't reach everybody, right? You can't I don't want to say save because it's not their job to save anybody, but you can't not everyone that you recruit is going to be a fit. You know, you're going to make some mistakes on personality. You're going to reach for a recruit that you really want, but also culturally doesn't fit and then it doesn't work out. And so, by the way, the things I'm saying in terms of like Penn State's culture and all those things, that's not me stumping for the university or one way or another. I'm just telling you what every recruit I've talked to, when they say like, oh, family environment, family atmosphere, they treat, these are some of the best coaches that I've been around as people and as coaches. That's what Penn State is presenting to all of their recruits. And sometimes it's going to miss and you're going to have, you know, when you recruit 25 kids a year and plus the transfer portal, there's going to be some hard feelings out there. So you're going to find exceptions to players that haven't felt like they were treated well at Penn State. But, you know, I think by and large, that is the reputation of a school like Penn State.
T. Frank, a little while back, I had the opportunity to host an event with essentially it was with player families. Mm-hmm. So I got to talk to them. And the point you just made is exactly it. In talking to families, not the players, the parents, and how they talked about the coaching staff, James Franklin specifically was exactly that. It's obvious James Franklin is not just recruiting the player. He's recruiting the families. Yeah. And that's his stuff. It matters for some players. It doesn't matter for other players. Let's move on. Let's go to Peter in Cleveland, who says, there's a lot of talk of James Franklin's inability to win big games. I think you need to allow for the fact that Ohio State almost always has the more talented team. But my question is, what could James Franklin actually do differently to succeed in those big games?
I think something that this is kind of where I have come down on this and what I've focused on is I'm in favor of the aggression that he has in terms of going for it, going for two, trying to maximize his points, because I think people see the result and they expect the traditional outcome of delaying the opportunity to win the game until the very end. And so, you know what I'm saying? Of like punt, kick, field goals, delay, 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 and then hopefully you have the ball last in order to score and win. And the problem I have with that philosophy is defense is not that way anymore. You're going to give up points. And don't wait until the very end to try and win the game. Because if you have the if you score more points and you put the game pressure on the other team, it forces them to do tactically things they don't want to do. Put themselves in position for risk. And so when you are in these big games, and Penn State is outmatched from a talent perspective, whether it's by, you know, let's say 3% or 8%, whatever it is in those margins, you have to make up that deficit. But I just think the selection of how and when has not always been great. I think he's learned that process of how to be aggressive and what to do in those situations of fake punts, right? So one of them worked against Michigan, but by and large, put your offense out there, let them go for it. Also, you know, the situation on the field of when you go for it and when you're aggressive, you know, 4th and 6 versus 4th and 3 at midfield. I think he's gotten better at those things. And I also think that in certain situations, like let's take the Michigan game last year, because I think that's one that everyone's very salty about, of his decision to go for it on 4th and 7 on Penn State's own side of the field when they weren't down by all that many points. But the problem was their defense had been out there the whole game and physically couldn't stop Michigan. Like, they were having a problem getting the Wolverines off the field before, like, a 3-and-out or anything like that. So Penn State didn't have enough possessions left to punt and play for a tie. They had to, from a possession standpoint, be aggressive and try to get points there, even if it was just a field goal, because they probably were only going to get the ball one more time. But fans see that, and then Michigan scoring and it making this big wild swing. Penn State was going to lose if they punted anyway, because they were going to be bled to death. So Penn State just kind of went for it, and then they died on their sword there. I don't have a problem with that, because you're getting to the same point, but you're allowing yourself the opportunity to potentially get more points. And to me, that's what I care about. You have to get points. You don't win by the prevention of points in football. I know it seems like you do sometimes, and sometimes you do, but against comparable teams, you can't win 6-9 anymore. If you are winning 6-9, the other team probably has a fatal flaw in their offense.
You know, T. Frank, I have a lot of thoughts on James Franklin's decisions going for it. First of all, I think he uses analytics, and I think he uses them correctly most of the time, and fans don't realize it, and they judge by results.
Right, right, right.
Fake punt, you make it. Hey, great call. Fake punt, and you don't make it. Lousy call. Well, guess yeah. what? The call is the call, no matter the results. And using, again, the Michigan game, when he chose to go for 2 points, the first score, as opposed to waiting and staying within one score by kicking the extra point.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, fans. You're wrong. You're wrong. He was correct in going for 2 initially. That's what analytics tells you, and that's what James Franklin did. Now, they didn't make it, but it was the right decision.
Yeah.
On the other side, the analytics versus the specific situation. I think James Franklin does do the analytics. I think he often makes the correct analytic decision, but he doesn't factor in what just is going on in the game yeah. itself. You know, it's like, hey, yeah. my defense is really tired at this point. I've got to factor that in, even though analytics says you go for it. You know, it tilts in my favor, 55%, 45%.
Yeah.
And there may be a factor of what's going on during the game. And so that's my issue with James Franklin. But I think analytically, like, he's usually right.
He just needs to get a little bit lucky. Like, they need to just get lucky. Honestly, like, the number of close games they've had against Ohio State, if they just win another one of those where I'm trying to think of, it was 2017 where they threw, it was 2017 and 2018 where they had a situation where if they had just gotten the ball around Chase Young's hand, they would have scored a touchdown and gone in the lead, but he tipped it with the edge of a finger. And so they lost the game, like in a lot of different ways.
Exactly. All right. That is it for quarter three at Ask T. Frank. We got more to go. Quarter four. Stick with us.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. We just wrapped up our Ask T. Frank segment. T. Frank, we hit two questions.
Yeah. You want to do an extended? You want to keep going?
Actually, I do, because you were just bringing up, and I think it's an important point. Penn State fans are so disappointed in those couple years against Ohio State where they had big leads late in the game. And I know it was soul crushing losing the games when you have double digit leads in the fourth quarter. And obviously you can point at the coaching staff and point at certain decisions. But again, those decisions often are probably analytically correct, but they just didn't go your way. I talked about tilting things in your favor, 55% to 45%. Well, that means you still have a 45% chance for that to fail. And you were just beginning to talk about one of the plays against Ohio State where just the fingertip of a tip pass makes the difference on the play and probably the game.
Yeah, and there's a certain aspect of some of those things are out of James Franklin's control because he, believe it or not, fans, he doesn't call the plays like the offensive coordinator calls the plays. So you can say, we're going for it here. Get me your best play. And then the offensive coordinator picks the wrong play. Whether it's the wrong play or not from a decision-making standpoint, I don't know what the options are, so I couldn't tell you, like, ah, in this situation, they should have done X or Y. But, like, that is one of those things in the... that's in the stew of decision making. Here's another one that I want to bring up because I thought about it, but we didn't have enough time. Is his evolution and use of it, of analytics? I think has improved in certain areas. Of he started talking about if you pin an offense inside their own 20, do you know the probability of them scoring is astronomically low? So punting and putting a good defense out there that has the ability to keep a team out of scoring territory, that is a really hard ask for the other offense to make that happen. But it doesn't work against every team. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to get you a first down. He's going to get you two first downs on certain drives. So you need to do something to keep the ball away from those players. So I think generally they have done a good job of understanding and applying those things. But it is just about when you do need to be aggressive, when and how, I think has just been the area where he's had to kind of evolve as a coach over time.
There was a game, an example I always use, T. Frank. I think it was Penn State against Purdue, but I'm not sure. It was approaching the end of the half, and the opponent had a fourth and one in their own territory, limited time left in the half. But Penn State was just hot at that point. They were marching up and down the field. And you're the underdog. Like I said, I think it was Purdue, but I could be wrong. And they chose to punt the ball. And I remember the announcer, the color guy, absolutely, positively, the right decision, have to do it. You got to. Well, they punt, talking to your idea of pinning a team back. Well, they weren't pinning. They had the ball like on their own 25, 29-yard line. So they weren't going to pin Penn State back. Penn State was going to get it maybe around their own 40-yard line or so. And Penn State marched right down the field and scored a touchdown. That announcer didn't come back on and say, well, I was wrong. Punting the ball was the mistake.
Yeah.
Because you play it safe, conservative. But I think analytics and understanding what was going on during that game said, you go for it. If you're the underdog Purdue, look, if you don't make it, but if you can have a chance to beat Penn State or keep them off the scoreboard another time before half, you better go for it, and you should, you want to think you can make it. Yeah. Well, there's still the chance you wouldn't have, and then that coach would have been destroyed by the media.
Yeah.
But I still am convinced that was the right decision, T. Frank. But again, fans, media, they'll judge results no matter what.
Yep.
Even if you analytically make the right decision. And I apologize for going off on that tangent, but I think I was more upset with the color guy on the TV coverage than I was anything else, because there's no way in the world they would go back and say, yeah, gee, now that I rethink it, they should have gone for it, T. Frank.
Yeah. And this is, that's reason number one of why T. Frank doesn't do television. There's nobody that people dislike more than the people talking during a football game, because your anxiety is at like a 9, and anything will set you off.
All right. Let's get back to Jim's questions for T. Frank. And here, back on the offensive side of the ball, T. Frank, how big a factor will Drew Aller be in the running game?
He will be a factor. I don't think he will be a big factor, but he has to be some semblance of a factor. And that doesn't mean that he needs to be the second on the team in rushing. He needs to provide a viable threat to slow down the defense when it comes to their decision-making against Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. It is literally drag. It is not, he's not supposed to be doing something that causes the defense to break fully. He's just trying to give Catron Allen and Nick Singleton a step. So in those read option situations, you can do a couple of things if you're a defensive end. You can read the quarterback and force him to keep the football. And that means you attack the running back, the dive player, and force the quarterback to keep the football. It's moments like that where Penn State has to be better, that Drew has to recognize in the moment what's happening and keep the football. Even if they have the Will linebacker scraping over the top, now he's one-on-one. He's got to make a play there, because it's a better situation than this free rusher who did not get blocked whatsoever is running full steam at the running back in the backfield, who's trying to read something away from that guy. That's what teams did to Penn State a lot last year, is forced Aller to keep the ball, and he wouldn't. And so therefore you had a lot of those negative or zero yardage plays. Providing just making the defense pay for it, you know, popping them in the nose when they do that and they leave their guard down, that makes that defensive end and that defensive coordinator think twice about that, because if there's one thing defensive coordinators hate, it is giving up yards in the run game. That's number one thing they refuse to do. They will cut off their arm and throw it out there as an extra defender if it would give them a better chance of stopping the run.
All right. Well, we're talking quarterbacks. How do you think Bo Prabula will be used?
He's going to do that. He is going to be a part of keeping the defense honest, and he's going to have a package that puts them in some conflict situations where I can even see both Aller and Prabula on the field together, where they're running special plays that are base plays in the offense. These are not things that they have created just to get Bo on the field, but when you run it with a quarterback, your options become better. Bo Prabula is a better triple option quarterback than Drew Aller will ever be. That doesn't mean he's a better quarterback. Maybe it means he fits this offense from the full playbook a little bit better, but you can fold in Bo Prabula to touch every part of what Koldnicki has done from Kansas all the way back to Wisconsin Whitewater. It's just, what is the threat? What is the percentage of him doing that? And how effectively is it applied? How effective is that aggression that we talked about when it comes to, it's a bit of a gamble having two quarterbacks on the field and running some non-traditional plays. How effectively do you understand the situation and apply those tools to those situations? So I think he will throw the football this year. He's not going to be a quasi fullback, but he is going to have a role where he is a triple option threat. And if the defense decides that he's going to be the runner and he never throws the football, then that's why. It's not that he has decided or they don't trust him. It's because the options presented, Bo has decided that running is the best option.
T. Frank, you kind of answered the question how to use them. I'm going to ask you, like, when to use them. Are there
goal line.
Like, goal
okay. Line. Yeah. I'm so tired of watching Penn State's goal line offense over the years of running Sean Clifford on third and one from the 2 yard line and getting half a yard. Bo Prabula in that situation with Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, whoever you want to put out there. If you're in the high red zone, Drew Aller is your quarterback because he's got a lethal laser cannon. And it's weirdly where he's the most confident to just rifle the ball in. Bo Prabula from the 5 yard in all day, because I don't want to watch that where Aller's the guy running the football, because I saw versions of that in previous iterations. I don't want to watch it again.
How about third and short?
I don't want to get too, that's the thing is like, you don't want to be too predictable. And that's where Prabula has to be able to throw the football, because if you are predictably expecting him to run the football and suddenly Tyler Warren or Andrew Rappelier is open on a play action over the middle, you've got to be able to use that option. Or even if it's just a play action, a rollout, whatever you want to do, he's got to provide that field stretching ability as a quarterback to throw the football, or else you can just stack nine guys in the box and there's no matter what he does, he's not getting a first down.
Very good. You don't want to become predictable like Will Levis coming in on third down and running 17 consecutive times, I believe it was, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Will Javen Williams and Alex Birchmeier and or Birchmeier be a factor this season?
I guess it depends on what you mean by factor. I do expect Javen Williams to play and to play maybe in every game as a guy who comes in at some point in a series. Does he play meaningful series and meaningful snaps? I guess I could see him playing in like 7 games. So I think that's meaningful for his development and for Penn State's development. You know, Drew Shelton had a similar trajectory, right? I could see Javen Williams doing that. Right now, there is not a path for Alex Birchmeier to do that because Cooper Cousins leapfrogged him. And at where he was last, at left guard, you have Vega Iwane and JB Nelson. So there is a future where he is part of the conversation, but I would imagine Cooper Cousins is going to be the guy that steps in at any positions needed on the interior, left, right, or center.
What do we look for on defense to say this is no longer Manny Diaz's defense, it's Tom Allen's?
Partially third down. I think that the nature of the third down defense is going to change and maybe be more coverage focused than purely pass rush. You know, I think they're still going to use elements of what they had last year, I imagine, where you're going to keep some of the pressure packages and some of the pressure looks, but it'll be Tom Allen's defense. And I'm curious to see how and when his pressures are a little more traditional, where it's like, we're going to blitz both linebackers from off the ball. That would be something I'm looking for. And then the coverage, like I said, the coverage umbrellas, the rotations, the unexpected players in certain positions, those are the things I'm looking for. But the problem is you might not see that and you might not recognize it because even on a replay, it just is a single shot. You're not going to see the full structure of the play too often. So I think those things. And then, like I said, is he being conservative in his gap movements up front? Are they just playing straight up? Or are they moving a little more and incorporating some of Manny Diaz's philosophies into this defense? That's what I'm looking for, but those are the things I would say that are different.
It will be interesting to see. And I wonder how much, you know, they had so much success with some of the things that Manny Diaz did. Will there be carryover that Tom Allen or James Franklin just says, hey, look, we did this successfully in years past. I want us to keep doing that. All right, Team Frank, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.